Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to FBN Holdings Full Year 2019 Financial Results Conference Call. Following an overview by the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Yuke Eka, Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon and good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings Investor and Analyst Result Presentation for the year ended December 31, 2019. My name is Yuke Eke, the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. I'd like to introduce very quickly my colleagues that are on this call, Dr. Chola Adedito, the CEO of FBNL, Karade Akinkugbe, the CEO of FBN Quest Merchant Bank, Bam Ojuma, CEO of FBN Life Insurance, Wale Ariyebi, is the CFO at the holding company, Patrick Yamabo, is the CFO of First Bank, Chegu Alebioshu, the CRO of First Bank, and then we also have Ini Ebong, who is First Bank's Group Treasurer and Head of International Banking Business. I guess you are all aware that certain states in Nigeria, including Lagos State, are under a 14-day lockdown on account of the COVID-19 pandemic. So all of us on this call are joining from our homes. I guess some of you are also joining from your homes. Certainly we'll have the chance to discuss the implications of COVID-19 pandemic in some detail on this call. Let me also confirm that we published our results 2 days ago, April 6th, and then posted the presentation this morning on our website. So I hope you've had the chance to look through the postings. As usual, I would start by running through the presentation with a clear focus on some slides, after which we'll go straight to Q&A. So I'll start straight from slide 7. As you may be aware, 2019 marks the end of the 3-year strategic planning program, SPP, which ran from 2017 to 2019. So we thought it was important to highlight the key regulatory and macro developments over those 3 years. And starting from 2017, where we adopted the IFRS, and also we saw recovery from recession, which was kind of slow. And then into 2018, when central bank introduced some stringent capital rules and dividend payout policy for banks. Finally, 2019, when there were a number of intervention funds launched by central bank, in addition to the introduction of a minimum loan-to-deposit ratio by CBN to stimulate lending by deposit money banks. Against this background, we are pleased with our performance over the 3-year period, as we begin to see from slide 7 of our presentation. So slide 7, our 2017 to 2019 business plan was basically focused around 3 strategic pillars. The first was about enhancing our revenue-generating capabilities, and we are pleased to report that we successfully ramped up our digital business, which now represents about 30.2% of our non-interest income. We have also expanded our agent banking network to over 53,000 agents across 772 local governments of the country. Only 2 local governments are left out at this time because of security concerns. Finally, as you will see in the details on that presentation, we are clearly the industry leader in digital banking solutions, with 30% market share of transactions processed by the most dominant switching company and 22% market share of interbank transfers on the MIPS platform. The second pillar that we had to work on was about strengthening our asset quality and improving our risk culture. And in line with our promise to the market, we delivered on our target of a single-digit NPL from 25% in 2019 to just about 9.9% in 2018, it was 25%, and then in 2019, it was 9.9%. More importantly, just being forward-looking, our vintage book remains below 1%. Finally, the third pillar was about strengthening the balance sheet and improving our operational efficiency. Our balance sheet is definitely in a stronger position now that we have solved the asset quality issues. Our liquidity ratios, both local currency and foreign currency, remain very robust, leading to the prepayment of our Eurobond commitments, cumulatively $750 million. And therefore, we are proud to say one more time that we have a fortress balance sheet to support our growth aspirations. In terms of costs, there has been progress, clearly, despite the appearance on the paper, as we have been investing strategically to drive our various platforms and initiatives. And we're going to see some of the results coming through in operational efficiency and incomes moving up in the right direction through the next strategic cycle, as well as help us to generate more revenues over the medium term. On slide 7, we provide the key numbers for the year ended 31st of December 2019. And we have also provided comparative figures 2018. We are happy to report significant improvement across virtually all metrics, particularly the asset quality side of things and profitability. Clearly, we have improved our top-line performance despite what was a very challenging economic environment. We are reporting increase in our profit after tax by about 27%. This was not only as a result of the decrease in impairment charge, but also a direct consequence of our top-line growth. In particular, non-interest revenue was up 20.6% year-on-year as we fast-tracked our transition towards become a transaction-led rather than an asset-led institution. Slide 8. Looking at the key ratios a lot more closely, we see improvements in the trends of performance. Key ratios to call out here on this slide include the improvement in our profitability over the years, resulting in the steady progress in the return on equity at 12.4% post-tax ROE. We have delivered above inflation yield to shareholders, and we're happy that this has happened. And we've also been able to bring down the NPL, like I said before, to below 10% as we guided the market. Now, achieving a single-digit NPL ratio was our biggest focus in 2019, arguably, and we're happy, very happy indeed, to have finally cleaned up the books. Now, the improvement in asset quality has also resulted in a lower cost of risk, which is now 2.5% against 3.5% in prior year, while our cost of funds increased to 3.1% from 3.4% in prior year. We have mentioned to you before, both at the H1 2019 and 9 months 2019 call, that our cost-to-income ratio will remain elevated for the 2019 financial year. Therefore, the increase we are reporting should not really come as a surprise. However, this has been driven by the investments which are deliberate in projects that we believe are income accretive and will also expand our dominance in the digital space. And so we're going to have some more details around the projects we are focusing on over the next 3 years. I think we need to spend a bit time on slide 9, just reviewing the recent development, speaking to COVID-19. These are very challenging times, to be honest, and we acknowledge that this pandemic is major, and this generation has not seen anything close to it. What is clear also is that for some nations, corporates, and individuals, there's a clear existential threat that it poses. We have responded along three lines as an institution. First, our staff remain our greatest assets. And so we have activated our remote work mode to ensure that the staff are safe and are healthy, meaning that except those that are on critical assignments, every staff is working from home. As I said, when we started this call, we all dialed in from our homes. We have also provided the necessary work tools and created connectivity among groups and departments to ensure minimal disruptions to work. We're happy with the success we've recorded so far. And of course, we're also monitoring productivity to be sure that staff continue to generate the required output. The second strand of our response is around the customers. We remain committed to excellent customer service. And again, we have activated our business continuity plans, and all our channels remain open since most of the branches are closed. Also, keep in mind the fact that we have about 53,000 agents across the Federation providing support to our customers. And if you go back 2 years ago, perhaps 3 years, we have consistently reported that over 85% of all customer-initiated transactions are conducted and consummated through alternative channels. We are so confident on the stability of our channels and platforms that we imposed charges for customers that preferred in-branch service or transactions within a band. So long before now, our customers had migrated to our e-channels, and you can see the numbers. Dominant in the digital space, 30% on InterSwitch and 22% on NIPS. I will also say that the customers are happy so far. Finally, we recognize our place in the corporate world, and we are proud to be a major player in the corporate coalition to fight COVID-19, aligning with government and other corporates. Here, our engagements are in two parts. First, we donated into a pool of funds, and also we have a bilateral working arrangement with one of the state governments, specifically Lagos, where we are providing support to pupils and students, providing them with preloaded tablets or learning tools so that they can continue to do their studies well before and after the crisis. We think that central banks and federal government stimulus package should assist in restarting the economy immediately after this pandemic. I will quickly jump to slide 22, and that's before we go to Q&A. And I want to just mention a few things. One, we have decided to not provide guidance at this time, given the uncertainty around the impact of the pandemic on markets and business activities. As we say, we are studying the environment. COVID-19 is nothing that was envisaged or planned when we were cutting our budget and estimates for 2020. And being a black swan, the impact will take a bit more time to dimension. So we will ask that we provide guidance at the next call, hopefully in the second quarter of the year that's commencing from April, May. However, if we assume normality and a return to business as usual at some stage, we believe that we can actually point you towards some of the things that we want to do under our 2020 to 2022 SPP. Those are the things that will guide our progression to regaining our leadership in the marketplace. This plan is built around four strategic pillars of performance. I'll quickly run through them. First is our commitment to growing our non-funded revenues with a clear focus on digital banking. At the same time, we recognize the need to improve efficiency and productivity across the group. And so we plan to do that through a focused cost optimization program, as well as partnerships with fintechs. The second pillar of our 2020 to 2022 strategic planning program is around optimizing our portfolio. Here, we'll focus on synergy extraction, which is central to our strategy of delivering quality returns to shareholders. We'd like to continue to diversify our revenue streams and improve revenue synergies across sectors and across markets where we play. In this connection, we believe that within the 3 years we are looking at, we should be interested in certain African countries. So we'll be looking at opportunities beyond Nigeria to deepen our market penetration. Thirdly, we are committed to leading the market in delivering innovative financial solutions. We also believe that the customers will remain first in our priority, and then they in turn will consider us as the preferred and go-to institution for all their transactions. Finally, the investments in our talents will be the critical enabler that will put together all of these initiatives that will underpin our 2020 to 2022 SPP. So that's basically the summary of our report card for 2019, also projecting into the next 3 years. With that, I will now ask the operator to open the Q&A session. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Gloria Fabidi. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can hear you very clearly, Gloria.
Okay. Please, I understand that you can't give detailed forecast now, but if you could just speak to the lines of your profit lines are already showing some stress during this lockdown, and the ones that you think will do well, so that we can at least get just an idea of the whole impact on your profits this quarter and next quarter. I'd also be hoping that the COVID-19 pandemic doesn't stretch beyond. And then again on capital, I just want to understand what your plans are. We see you are very close to the minimum, and if you could also tell us what your current LDR ratio is, and then have you done any simulation in terms of if there is a devaluation, how do you expect that to impact your current, your capital, and what your plans are in general regarding capital improvement this year? And also your OPEX, if you can get an idea of the run rate for Q1, that can guide us towards Q2 and Q3 and Q4. Then finally, if you can just tell us in general what is the loan book look like, as in what, as we speak now, can we say that all loans, bad loans, have been completely dealt with, and are there any stress areas you're seeing, considering things are happening now and the drop in oil prices and the pandemic? What parts of your loan book seem to be showing stress? Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Mr. Wally from Sigma Pensions. Please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for the presentation, as well as I think finally we're starting to see improvements in your numbers as you've guided to. And I think those very good set of numbers. And my question is just on your oil, slightly on your oil and gas book. What will be the break even of your oil and gas, your upstream oil and gas book, on current oil prices? What's the break even price for you structured those loans at in your current oil and gas book? And then secondly, have you hedged, or what is the state of your oil and gas upstream book has been hedged, and at what prices were they hedged at? Thirdly, I would also like to know, what are you from an FCY positioning perspective? Are you net long or net short or barely square? So if we see a higher devaluation, I'm just trying to see, so we've had a higher devaluation, what does that translate to in terms of earnings for First Bank? Also, on your cost, 2019, we saw a big pickup in cost. You said it's about making investments in digital, things like that. Do we expect that to continue into 2020, or do you think 2019 was just a one-off in 2019, and that's just the end of it, or is it something that we're going to look forward to another round of high OPEX in 2020, or what's your just commentary about around that? I think your last question has been asked on the New York CAR. What happens to your CAR in the event of a Naira devaluation to say 400 Naira?
We will now take our next question from Jerry Nibu from Cardinal. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. So I think a couple of my questions have been asked already, but still on oil and gas exposure. I understand that in 2019 you also restructured some of those exposures. I'd like to know how much of your restructured loans are in the upstream oil and gas segment. And then also speaking to the cost initiatives that you undertook in 2019 and how it could potentially be earnings accretive in 2020, can you, be more specific in terms of, the areas, where they would, be earnings accretive? Again, that's assuming the whole COVID-19 issue goes away. Those are my questions.
Okay, I think we can take, we can give responses to some of the questions. Gloria asked five questions. Wale had five questions, and Jerry had two. I will request the CFO of the Commercial Bank, Patrick, to take all the questions related to capital, devaluation, OPEX, and a few other questions around costs, while Shegu will come in to take questions around the loan book, including hedging that we've adopted. Patrick, please.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Patrick. Good day, everyone. So a couple of questions were asked, and I will start with the question that pertains to profits, and which is really the impact of the lockdown and associated issues on profits. So there are two bits to it. We have the, in terms of downside, I mean, obviously following the lockdown, business momentum, as we typically know it, either in terms of trading, international trading, and the typic manufacturing sales and all that during this period would drop. And so that will filter into the financials. It has implications for non-interest income as well as interest income. But frankly, the bigger consideration for interest income has to do with ERR, that the CBN continues to get it to banks, as well as the low-rate environment. That is speaking to the downside. The flip side, however, of this lockdown is that more than any bank in the country, it plays a lot to our competitive advantage. And I would two areas, e-business. As you would have observed over the last couple of years, we've been growing that franchise aggressively. And what this lockdown has meant is that lots of transactions that the customers will typically walk into the branch to do, they are tapping into the alternate channels, to be specific here, to either their mobile, USSD, online to effect. And so our competitive advantage in e-business, coupled with the investment that have positioned us to scale for a time like this, are playing out well for us. And the longer this lockdown lasts, the greater we should see momentum and adoption. And the beauty of this is that, again, depending on how long this lockdown lasts, when this is all over, customers would have gotten used to this new way of banking, which again plays to advantage. The other point to stress in terms of upside here is really around our agency. And so where cash has to be transacted, where people have to operate in remote areas, the best opportunity in the absence of being able to walk into a branch is to walk to an agent, either do cash in, cash out, and do some of your transactions. We've grown our agent network to about 53,000 agents. We are really the only credible bank agency, viable bank agency network out there. And we are seeing momentum pick up. Initially, things slowed down following the shutdown, but with all the processes in place now, we are beginning to see ramp up. And so the way the lockdown has played is the strategic priorities to drive transactional business as well as alternative banking are coming to full play, and those are our competitive advantage. There was a question around capital and CAR. Specific to the bank, we were about 15.5% at the end of 2019. So at this level, we meet regulatory requirements, and we are not concerned about our capital levels, and for a couple of reasons. The first is, apart from meeting the regulatory requirements for capital, the operating environment in the immediate term and towards the end of the year will have a greater risk, would require greater risk consideration.
Hello?
Patrick, go ahead. I suspect his line might have dropped.
Yeah.
Okay, so okay, we're waiting for our CFO to get back online. I think I'll just continue from where he stopped. I think the key message, as far as the COVID and the lockdown is concerned, is that what we are seeing is this is playing to the strength of the institution. And we are happy that we concluded the investment in our IT and digital infrastructure. We've seen volumes ramp up on our various digital channels, and we are quite pleased with this. But generally, like you mentioned, we've seen that the entire the economy itself, not just in Nigeria, globally, things have dramatically slowed down. But we expect that the expectation at this point in time is that the trajectory of COVID in Nigeria may not exactly follow what we have seen in the Western world, and we might see gradual reopening of the economy earlier than we have seen in other jurisdictions. But the key message here is that our channels are working. Our agency banking, where we are quite the dominant player, has kept things significantly, and we are very pleased with what we are seeing as far as this is concerned. So I will pass the call to our CRO, who will answer the question related to the loan deposit ratio, the loan portfolio, and how we expect that to evolve in the course of time.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me start by saying that following the outbreak of COVID-19, the International Accounting Standards Board on March 20 issued guidelines on applying IFRS accounting consideration of the coronavirus outbreak. Following that, PRA, EBA, as the European Banking Association, and ECB also published guidelines on regulatory requirements and accounting implications of the pandemic. And that IFRS is based on principles and judgment, and that a high degree of judgment will be required. Secondly, the significant increase in credit risk cannot be determined by short-term cash flow issues, but throughout the life of the asset. Let me also clear that if you operate in an emerging market like Nigeria, it will be prudent to also factor in currency adjustment in your plan. Our 2020 portfolio plan did that. So, no surprise. Now, going to the questions, sustainable oil and gas financing rely on three variables. Oil price, level of reserve, and life of the operating license. For reserve, we are pretty fine. Brent today, is 32. So that is the worry. However, these firms also just got their license renewed for the next 20 years. So they have 19 years to operate with their reserve. Now, if you look at it this way, the issue of break-even point now becomes a non-issue because we can always use time to balance out whatever price could not deliver. Two, our oil and gas portfolio, which is the upstream, you will observe that it reduced from 24.2 in 2018 to 17.9 in 2019. To grow that beyond limits. We do have hedge or hedges. And they are in the money now. But it should not be prudent for a bank looking at the long term to think about hedge alone, other than looking at sustainable oil and gas financing. We are long on foreign currency, and I think it's also showing in the financials, that you have seen. So coming back now, is that we don't foresee any material risk or deterioration in our oil and gas portfolio. What will happen is under the BOTA policy, the loan tenor will be elongated to accommodate orderly repayment, and we are all fine, in as much as we have pretty reserve that can pay us out. Thank you very much.
Okay, Patrick, you want to go back to your response, Patrick? I think we have to apologize for the loss in communication. Patrick will continue, please.
Okay, thank you very much. Apologies as well. This is Patrick. So I was speaking to the capital bit when the call drops. So just a couple of quick things. First of all, current level is at regulatory requirement. The business outlook to the end of the year would not put pressure on our capital position, given the economic outlook and the way we see business momentum playing out. We also have the opportunity to accrete capital coming out of earnings. We've been doing that every year successfully. And we think through earnings, we can easily accrete an additional 300 basis points. So this is really 300 basis points on top of our current capital position, which is above regulatory requirements in a market where business momentum will not accrete more capital. We have excess tier two, which we can bring to bear. So the whatever we accrete, when we accrete organically, we also leverage with the tier two, and we have in place. So overall, we are comfortable with our capital position. We've done the analysis, the simulations against additional FX and devaluation, and we think we're good on capital for 2020. There was a question around FCY. Position and what that and the link back to the current environment, the potential devaluation. So yes, we are currently long on our FCY books, and based on our figures at the end of 2019, a 9% currency devaluation will translate into 21 billion profit for us. If you leverage that against our tier two, you are looking at capital positions of around 27, 28 billion. At that level, we can easily take risk-weighted assets in excess of 300 billion. So we're good, frankly, in a currency devalued environment. The last question I'd like to take has to do with cost. The observation was that cost spiked last year, and whether we expect to see similar spikes this year. No, we don't. We expect our cost growth to return to our historical norms under normal circumstances. We appreciate that the devaluation of the naira will translate into increased cost, and whatever measures the government wants to take to address the COVID-19 or currency situation, if it leads into inflation, will result in overall price increases. Before these, again, our costs we expect to be under control. If we layer this on, based on the projections we are seeing, we do not see a spike happening this year, but rather trending back to our historical norm in spite of these two challenging situations, i.e. COVID and potential inflation coming out of the currency devaluation. You would recall that the two key drivers, and I'm putting them in two big buckets, of our spike last year were, one, operational losses, we explained those in full, and some of the investments we had to make to drive business in terms of our internal processes, our external processes, and as well as some marketing spend. We speak about the e-business growth. 2018 to 2019, we saw about 60% growth. 2018, about 60%. The whole of 2019, we saw about 40% growth in red. If you look at it in terms of net red, it's almost 50% growth. These kind of growth, these kind of business momentum are a reflection of some of the investments we are making. And we're already seeing this investment pan out in our figures. So to short answer to your question, expect our cost growth to return to historical trend. And then secondly, the investments we've made, we are seeing them pan out, and the timing could not be better. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick and Shegu. Can we go to the next set of questions, please?
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will take our next question from Mr. Muani from SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello?
Please Perfect. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for the call and the guidance you provided. The first is on the impact of business. So trying to use the intervention funds by the central for the reduced rate on your yields as well. And then secondly, I know the central bank is talking about giving banks room to restructure oil and gas and a few other sectors. What your risk management is looking at right now in terms of than likely. And then secondly, on your NPL coverage is down to about 40. What level is, given that your peers are closer? That's my question.
I'm really sorry that we didn't get your question very, very clearly, Muani. It would be nice for us to understand those three questions. You asked three questions, but they weren't very, very clear.
So if you don't mind, could you repeat the question, please?
Okay.
And if you can speak a little louder,
sure.
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. First question is, I want to understand what management comfort level is, particularly when you consider that your peers are. So how quickly do you think you get to a 100% level NPL coverage? And then the second is on this recent CBN interventions. I want to understand how you're looking at it as a business, so the likely impact, what kind of, shall I say, forbearance or comfort it gives you as a bank. And then I think within your exposures, where do you think, or what are your thoughts around restructuring right now? Because the central bank is already giving room for banks to restructure a few of the exposures. How are you looking at that? And then I think with the CBN intervention fund, the yields have been reduced. So the rate used to be 9%, now down to 5%. I want to understand how that affects your interest income from.
We will now take the next question from Ada Aga from Augusto & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello,
can
I go ahead?
Please go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so I just wanted to ask, what percentage of your FX orders were filled, by CBN before the lockdown period? That's one. And the second question is, I'd like to get an idea of if there are any discussions with CBN on FX controls, especially for external repayments on loans and on trade. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Jerry Nabu from Cardinal. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. I just have a follow-up question to the questions I asked before. So you were speaking about your CR and your capital adequacy. You said even when you simulated at a certain FX rates and potential devaluation, you still feel that you're in a comfortable position. I'd like to know what FX scenario did you use in the simulation for your capital positioning? And secondly, with respect to your Africa expansion strategy, so what are we looking at? Are you trying to deepen your presence in countries where you're already operating at, or you're looking at other countries? And then are these some kind of organic or inorganic projects, especially for the countries where you already have a presence? Then also on the oil and gas exposures. So you have said that, yes, you are comfortable, but if you can give a sense of the oil price, with which you benchmark some of these loans. So just for us to have an idea of the worst case scenario and how, position you are. Yes, I know that you can restructure, you can elongate tenors for these things, but then, just to help us have a sense of the true nature of the exposure, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to request the CFO of the Commercial Bank to take the questions from callers. Patrick, please.
Okay. So the question was really, with the currency devaluation simulation, what loss norms did we consider? And the response will be, this was done on a case-by-case basis. We have the data. It's our customers, their propensity to manage the current situation is individualistic to them. We also plan to tap into but we also plan to work with them to tap into the $3 trillion plus overall forbearance provided by the CBN to see, to help them through. So, again, the specific loss cases applied was on a case by case basis. Now, having said that, we are also alert to two things. It gives us the firepower from a capital perspective. The first is our FX position, which is long. And I had commented earlier on that with currency devaluation, every 9% devaluation translates into 21 billion profit, which if leveraged takes us to about 28 billion, which has the capacity to cover about 300 billion in risk-weighted assets. That's one. Two, we will accrete profits organically, easily, and we are not trying to give guidance here because on this call we would not give earnings guidance, but our expectation is we can easily accrete more than 300 basis points. And if you think about that in terms of profit capacity to take financial hit, or you translate that earnings into T1 and leverage with the excess T2, we are comfortable. To the questions about coverage ratio, the CRO will respond to that. To the question about the about African expansion, the CEO First Bank would respond to that.
Okay, thank you very much. I will also ask that Amy take the question around CBN, getting the CBN on external repayments and trends. So, but before then, Shegu, the CRO, will take the questions around risk. Shegu, please.
By laying the fact that across the world, regulators have been responding to COVID-19 pandemic issues and cash flow that could follow. So what CBN did was in alignment with all what global central banks have done, hearing. So for us, we are comfortable. We don't have so much intervention funds, but even at five, we consider the totality of yield from our customers in applying for intervention fund right from the outside. So what is more important to us is not just the interest we earn from that customer, but the totality of the yield that also will bring to us. But what is paramount is that because we consider the credit risk, quality at entry is so important. So whatever, I mean, any candidate you are presenting to Central Bank must be that candidate that I will ordinarily be willing to give our funds to directly and be able to deal with the consequences. So that satisfies that area. So we don't have any concern. I mean, we're fine, and it's okay for us to do. On the issue of coverage, we see anything between 60 to 70% as comfortable for us. And I can assure you that we'll get there even before the end of 2020. If you flip back and check last year, we're about 80. But as part of our resolution plan, we needed to take care of the books. And that took a portion of the provision, which was good enough. Here is for us to build, and the capacity to do so is so strong. before the end of 2020, we'll be within a band of 60, 70 to give assurance. On the oil price and benchmark, oil price is only useful if you have limited time or where reserve is not there. But for us, the benchmark no longer matter. What matters most is the capacity for them to repay. And so if the catch is there, you're fine. And temporary setback, actually, in cash flow does not mean that your everything about that business has gone down. The reality is that you have opportunity to reset. We have some of our counterparties producing at $30 a barrel. We have some at 25. And so, even at those people producing at 25, today they are not underwater. Those people who are 30 are back to profit, it's bread at 32. So, that's not an issue for us. The most important thing is one, level of reserve. Two, that they have their license for the next 19 years more, and then we can continue. Because if you use the benchmark, you will have lost the fact that they will also need to reinvest continuously from the same cash flow. So even if you use benchmark and you said you are covered, you will have left behind the fact that you need to continually reinvest to get their assets up and running. Thank you.
Okay, I will require the group treasurer to speak on our engagement with CBN before the CEO of the commercial bank comes to discuss African expansion plan. Ine, please.
Okay, speaking to the questions around their FX restrictions or anything of that sort being planned, no, we don't believe that is the case. The central bank has been clear in its communication around markets and its activities. Indeed, they've been rather a lot more responsive this time as opposed to the last time we came under such an oil price shock in that regard. In terms of outstanding transactions, CBN is settling its obligations. I know there have been a couple of what we deem administrative delays once in a while, but they are settling those obligations, and we remain convinced that they will continue to backstop the market in the segments and windows they continue to operate. Thank you.
Okay. Shana, please.
We will now take our next question from Caitlin.
No,
Burns,
sorry. Before we go to the next question, we have to take.
I will take
the
question. The
African expansion plan, please.
I will take the question on the African African subsidiaries expansion plan. Our focus over the next 3 years is to optimize our footprint across the continent, starting with entrenching ourselves more in the countries where we currently operate. And we are actually open to both organic and inorganic considerations. But over and above that, we are also looking at other critical markets where we believe our presence will add to our pan-African strategy. Again, I draw attention to the imminent implementation of the African Continental Trade Agreement, which we believe is quite significant, and it will change the operating landscape across the continent. So on the back of that, this is an area of focus for the bank. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the next set of questions, please.
We will now take our next question from Kathleen Byrne from Prudential. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Just got a few questions. So the one is, there's a rumor going around that you're selling your insurance business to Sanlam. So I just want to confirm whether that's true or not. Then I wanted to ask around how you're juggling the requirements that the central bank has put in place, such as the increased loan to deposit or loan to funding requirements, because this is a very tough environment to have to sort of handle those sort of things as well. Then I wanted to ask you on the impact on the regulation change on that e-banking income, where there was a cap to the amount you could charge. What impact will that have for you? And then I just want to ask whether you're doing any swaps with the central bank. Thanks.
We will now take the next question from Mr. Wally from Sigma Pensions. Please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. My question really was on your insurance. I see in your report, annual report, you put there that you're planning to sell to, or I think as part of your strategic outlook, or you're looking to dispose of your 5% interest. When do you think this transaction will be concluded? I think that's just a sense on when you think that will be concluded. So my second question is on the oil book again. I don't know why the CR is a bit reluctant to state the oil price break-even cost. What's the average break-even cost? I agree that level of reserves, but other banks disclose this number, so I don't know why you're... Is this something that maybe we can attend later? I think it would be fair if you disclose it, because everybody is worried about the oil price now. Secondly, also on your... What would it do? So if you're extending the duration of your loan book because of trying to sort of ensure that oil and gas loans, what would be the average tenor you would say you extend your oil and gas loans out to? How far out are you going to push it out to be able to ensure that the cash flows still work out at the prices you've worked out? Then also on the hedges, what percentage of your upstream oil and gas loan book is hedged or not hedged? And at what prices have you hedged? Yeah, then lastly, where do you see interest rates going over the rest of the year? Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Kato Mukuru from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the presentation and very good set of results. Congratulations on achieving your target. My first question is on your net open position. Could you just tell me what your on-balance sheet net open position is in dollars? Also, on the insurance business, what I'd like to understand is, will there be a gain? How much are you selling? Is it control? Or are you selling a 30% stake? If you give us a little more detail on that transaction, that would be appreciated. And then my last transaction is, I'm still trying to understand what we should be thinking in terms of provisions this year. I understand the judgment based decision, but how should we even begin to model it? What should we be thinking in terms of risk charge? How should we be interpreting all of this into real numbers? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. I would start off with the responses. I will take the question on insurance, and then we have questions on the loan book. So Shego will take those questions. There's also a question for Patrick. I guess you'll have to take the question on e-business and central banks attempts to regulate the pricing or the fees we earn. Let's be very clear, please, on the insurance. If you read the statements to the market,
we did not say that we have made a deal on the insurance business. In keeping with the finest tenets of transparency and full disclosure, the directors of the holding company considered it right to tell the market that we were in discussions with our partners, Sanlam, on that business. That was as far as we disclosed. We also said we were engaging with regulators. We have not made any deal. We haven't signed any sale. And at the right time, we'll make announcements to the market. So at this point, there is no further comments to make on that. We only disclosed what we thought was appropriate, given that we are going to publish our accounts and post balance sheet debt event. We just highlighted it as a matter of full disclosure. So if you can please permit us to remain silent on that. At the right time, if there's a deal, we'll definitely make that position available to the market. Thank you. Let me invite the CFO to speak on the areas that are pertinent to him.
Okay, thank you very much. So I think there are a couple of questions. The first is, how to do with business? And the question posed was really around the impact of regulation on our e-business earnings. So you're right, effective January this year, the CBN introduced policies, you know, that essentially regulated rates downward in ways similar to what you did in 2019, where rates were regulated downwards as well. Now, the key areas where that were impacted by these are really maintenance fees, which typically benefits that have gone from monthly to once every quarter, FAR fees, ATM fees, SMS. So a couple of lines were impacted. But the implication of this as well is our e-business related costs also benefited from that, specifically the remote control, which is a key cost in our e-business, for e-business. So net-net, we've simulated what this means for us. It means a reduction in our e-business income. So in other words, the 50% year-on-year growth we saw in our net e-business income will take a hit if status quo is maintained. However, we are countering this. We are countering this in a number of ways. The first is we are growing the business. We plan to grow the business this year. We also plan to introduce products, because this business is not just about scale, but the types and availability of products through which we can accrete income. So those two will happen this year. We also, in ways, will benefit from the current operating environment where the lockdown implies limited mobility. And depending on how this lasts, we will see commensurate impact or upside in our e-business. We're in a lucky position. I spoke about that earlier on, which is we've been making significant investments. So the capacity to scale, as well as the capacity, the ability to introduce those products, we have them in place. The other thing that will help counter the impact of e-business is our agency, which we spoke about earlier on. And we said we have about 3,000 agents. We have the capacity to serve their cash management needs. Their solutions run on, is powered by digital platform. So all these combined, we expect increased volume, coupled in our product to help offset this operating environment that the reduced rate that the regulator has enforced. So the question about interest rate for the rest of the year, I think the first thing is that this is an unusual time, and the regulator's approach to monetary policy is unique. Ordinarily, we expect rates to move up this year, given everything on the table, and if rates move up, we will be a key beneficiary. And so, just to put that in perspective, a 7% increase in rate based on our books as of 31st December 2019 will accrete about 30 billion more profit for us. So we look forward to a higher rate environment. We would respond to what the regulator does. Thank you.
Okay, sir, do you want to respond to some of the issues?
Yes. Okay, yes. The first one was on EDIA. The CFO clarified that based on the structure of our balance sheet and the revenue opportunities that we have, that we can support up to 300 billion risk-weighted assets. In responding to EDIA, in 2019, we grew our loan book, net loan book, by 11%. But we chose the client we are willing to build. We will continue to abide by our RAC, knowing fully well that the credit risk will sit with us. We will have the LDR in mind, but also having quality at entry in mind. If we balance both, we have capital to grow, and then we are fine. On oil price break-even point, I hinted that some of our customers are producing at 25, some at 30. And if you look at a company that has been operating for 40 years in oil and gas, perhaps maybe they're producing at 10. So they produce at different rates, and they have different level of profitability. And I also alluded to the fact that we have hedges, and the hedges are in the money. So I try to clarify that. If you check 20 years average, oil price average is $40. So that gives you that if my customers are even producing below 40 years average price, it's 40 years, 20 years average price, you see it's $40. It tells you that we have people, customers that we can deal with. But even if they're producing at 25, they need to also reinvest. And therefore, you can't just take all their cash flow, so we need to have that. On the provisions, things are evolving. And I put forward the ISB guidelines on responding to COVID-19. And accounting issues. We are evaluating those. We do know that it's likely that you might have impairment, not necessarily NPL, but because the lifetime PD will change with your operating environment, you might have less than 5% increase in impairment charge. But events are unfolding, and I'm sure in subsequent calls, we will be able to put numbers to that. Thank you.
Okay, so Amy, I think there was a question on our swaps, if we had any swaps with CBN.
Can you just close out with that?
Okay, I would just say that we have swaps and other derivative counterparts with a wide range of counterparts, not just with the central bank. And as they mature, we deal with a wide range of counterparts in the market.
Thank you very much, Amy. Do we have more questions in queue, please?
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our next question from Ronak Gandhia from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gents. Thanks for the presentation, and again, just to echo what Akato was saying, congratulations on the NPLs. It's been a long road. It's been a torturous road, but glad to see you finally there. Having said that, one of the effects of that capital, or one of the effects of that NPL road, is that your capital adequacy, if I look at the full IFRS 9 capital adequacy ratio, it's at 11.3%. If I were to take the conversation back 3 months ago when you're doing your 9 months call, I think Patrick or Shagun had mentioned that by the end of the year, that ratio would be as high as 15%. So could you just share your thoughts on why that capital adequacy ratio did not increase during the last year? And if you could provide a clear roadmap on how that will be achieved over the next 2-3 years. I know we've talked briefly about the capital you could generate from a revaluation, internal capital, but it seems all that capital that you will be generating could be consumed by the devaluation of the Naira, by the increase in LDR requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So it would be good if you could provide some clarity on that. The second question, again, to echo what Kato mentioned, and I don't think it was answered, was that the FX net open position, if you could just clarify what that net open position is, the exact number, at the bank level and at the group level, and is it and how much of it is on balance sheet and how much of it is off balance sheet. Third question is on your oil and gas exposure. I totally understand what Shagun is saying. If the underlying borrower has reserves, you can continue to extend the duration of that loan, and he could continue to make payments. However, I would like to understand what implications that has in terms of the duration of the asset versus your duration of liabilities. What mismatch does it cause, and is that something of a concern? And finally, something that never really gets talked about in any of your calls, presentations, etc., is your UK subsidiary. It's 20% of your assets, so it would be good if management can talk about the underlying performance of this bank. What kind of ROEs is it achieving? What kind of growth is it achieving? What's the outlook for that subsidiary? Thank you. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Mr. Dim Iji from Standard Chartered Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the call. Just to re-echo the questions by the previous caller, wanted to know what plans do you have to improve your Tier 1 capital, given that now and it could be a little more costly to acquire funds as Tier 2 funds as it was before. And knowing that around this time is also not very, very good time to acquire new equity. So what plans do you have really to improve it from the 15.5%, which is really close to the regulatory minimum? Also, on the oil and gas upstream facilities that has been hedged, I wanted to know who has the, if First Bank owns the final payment liability in the event of, in this case, that all prices have gone down, who has the final payment liability? First Bank, or is there another entity who is also, First Bank has edged with? Thank you.
And our next question from Sochi Solanka from Renka. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you clearly. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, hi. This is Ojisola here from Renaissance Snap. Thank you for the call. I just have a few questions. So the first one is, you know, you've spoken quite a bit about the digital investments you've been making. Can you just shed some color on what exactly these are? The second question is, if you can just take a step away from oil and gas, I know that's what everyone is focused on. For the other sectors on your loan book, where have you seen pressure coming from, you know, separate oil and gas? And what kind of conversations are you having with them so far? My third question is with respect to agent banking. How do you think about what you're rolling out vis-a-vis what CNF is doing? You know, better said, are you part of CNF or are you building a parallel network of theirs and you can benefit from both eventually? My next question is on the cost base. So if you look at that number, which is just over 300 billion, what portion of that is one-off? Okay, essentially the number that should fall off because it's not going to repeat going forward. Then just in terms of NPL, if the CRO could just talk a little bit about, in terms of how you addressed it in 2019, what's the split between what was written up, restructured, etc.? And my final question is, can you just tell us what the breakdown of the loan book is between stages, 2019 versus the previous year? So what's in stage 1, stage 2, and stage 3, 2019 versus 2018? Thank you. Thank
you. Okay. That's quite a lot. And we'll try to take all of them from AFG Hennis. We have another question from Stanchett, and then Renkat, the last one, so Jisho Lanke. So if I can ask Patrick to kick off the responses. There's a question around Tier 1 capital. Came back again. And then the other question around agent banking. You want to take those questions, Patrick? And then Shola will take the question on FBN Bank UK. And then Shegu will come back to take the questions on oil and gas. Please, Patrick.
Okay, thank you very much. So the question around capital. Now, I think. A lot of the discussion we've historically had is that given all the significant impairment charges we had to take, coupled with our confirmation to the market that we will get a single-digit NPL, the market concern was that we will either not have enough capital to deliver the single-digit NPL, or if we were to demonstrate enough capital, we will not meet the single-digit NPL. That has been the consistent discussion point. We delivered both of them as assured the market. So we have single-digit NPL, and we took all the charges we needed to take, plus if you recall, part of what we said last year spiked our OPEX were operational losses we decided to take in to settle disputes with governmental agencies. And we still came out with our CAR at 6.5%. Some of the things we gave assurances last year will be utilized to deliver these were one, organically accreting capital, and we did that. We also said we will complement by strengthening Tier 2. We delivered that. We also made mention of the fact that within regulatory risk reserve was at least 100 basis points in capital that we could tap into. And if you look at our results at the end of 2019, based on our loan book cleanup, we're able to extract about 19 billion. We delivered that. We still have some cushion there, and will be released as we complete the cleanup and demonstrate to the regulator that our based on our IFRS position, there is no need for an additional regulatory charge. We spoke about our long position and how that can accrete to profit. That did not happen last year, and so the earnings benefit, that is coming from a devaluation, and so the earnings benefit and the car impact didn't show then, but it's showing up this year. So the first question around our car last year, we gave assurances about a couple of things. We delivered a good number of them. We delivered the single-digit NPL, took the charges through P&L, cleaned up our books, and still came out with a 16.5% CAR. We are in 2020. And we spoke earlier on about what, again, we plan to do for CAR in 2020. Between the capital that meets regulatory requirements is 15%. The fact that the business environment would not create business growth pressures on our existing capital, the fact that we will organically accrete capital, which we will capitalize during the year as well. The fact that we have excess tier 2 that we can leverage, that we can use to leverage our T1. Again, similar to some of the discussions we had last year, looking at 2020, we are comfortable that we have the capital we require to take the business through this year, in addition to any treasure that will come out of currency devaluation. Don't forget, every time there's currency devaluation, we are actually better off because we accrete more profit than is consumed by the risk-weighted assets. So our capital is fine. There was a question around agency banking and whether we are part of SINEF or whether we are running our thing in parallel. We are part of SINEF. We are on that board. We are part of that consortium, and we would leverage or benefit equally or better than most other parties in SANEF. But here is our experience. But in addition to that, we continue to grow our network. Here is our observation. You see, for your agency business to be very successful, a couple of things need to be on the table. First, the decision-making process needs to be swift. With our agency banking business, we can have meetings and make decisions that SANEF will spend 3 months or 6 months still trying to figure out because it's a consortium of lots of banks. Two, at the heart of agency banking are two critical things. One, how you manage those agents. And two, the cash management service you offer to those agents because they are generating cash. To be able to do that very well, you need to have branches that can act as hubs for groups of agents. And this is where our distribution network is a competitive advantage because we are really the only bank with that kind of access that positions our branches to act as hubs for these agents. And because there's a single command and control within the bank, everything required to manage those agents, we can easily execute. SANEF will have to go through a long process to come to that same landing. We have a disruption right now. We are making decisions internally about how to provide the cash management needs of those agents under this circumstance. We are on a daily basis interacting with them and addressing their issues. SANEF can't respond that way because all the banks need to come together to have those discussions, and those discussions are not happening. So, short answer to your question, we are part of SANEF. We also have our agent banking network. However, we see clear competitive advantages coming out of our model, and it's showing not just in terms of volume, but also
we want to continue with the response.
No, let me just round up, UK, let me just round up the point where that Patrick was making. To summarize, on SANEF, we are an integral part of SANEF. In fact, we sit on the board of SANEF. But because agent banking is a key part of the strategy of Trust Bank, we have decided to roll out our separate network, but in collaboration with SANEF, and I think that is very important. I will move on to take the question on FBN Bank UK, which, as you rightly highlighted, is a very, very important part of our franchise, 20% of the loan book. Today, we are very happy. We are very happy with the kind of results that we are getting out of the of that particular franchise. It remains our flagship franchise, our window into the international financial market. The ROE expectation is different from our expectation from our other businesses, given the fact that it's operating in a developed world, even though it's an African-focused business. So our ROE target and expectation is much lower. The way we look at FBA UK in the portfolio of our investment, it has helped us to reduce the risk profile of our franchise. Long and short, we are very happy with what we are seeing, what is coming out of that franchise. It's doing well from our perspective. The last question I will take before I yield the floor is, someone asked the question around what are the nature of the digital investments that we're talking about. When we set out in 2017 that we want to reorientate our institution from a credit-led institution to a transaction-led institution, that entails significant investment in our processing capacity. Some of the investment that we've made in that last over the last 3 years, we include we've made new investments in the core banking application. We've enhanced the processing capacity of the core banking application. Today, our core banking application is trying to handle up to about 45 million customers, given our expectation in terms of our growth trajectory. We've also made significant investment in various channels. So I don't know whether you're aware, recently our mobile banking app, the First Mobile, won the best mobile banking app in this part of the world. So we continuously, we are improving on it, we are working on it. Given the fact that innovation is also central to what it is that we're trying to achieve with the institution, we've actually set up a digital innovation laboratory where we are continuously looking at the customers' needs, their expectations, and we are continuously investing, fine-tuning our product, and indeed launching new products. The other bit, and we've also made significant investment in our transaction banking platform. Today, we have an integrated cash management and trade finance management platform that we call First Direct, which allows our corporate customers to initiate transactions from the comfort of their home. It allows them to manage liquidity. It allows them to also do account pooling from different banks. So those are just part of the investment that has been made. And because of the kind of volume growth that we have experienced and we expect to continue to experience, we've also made significant investments in the back office in terms of storage, in terms of the quality of our links, to ensure that we deliver on our promise to our customers. I will round up this particular section by highlighting the fact that today, over 85% of our customers in these transactions are conducted on channels. We currently control over 30% of the volume of transaction process, digital transactions process market. And when you look at the NIPS platform, we control over 22% of transactions that are processed through that. So is there any area where we believe we stamp our leadership is in the area of our digital transformation. And that's just on the customer facing side. We've also made significant investment on the internally focused side in terms of what we're doing in the area of risk management, what we're doing in the area of finance, human capital, and our procurement processes. All of them digitized, and they are bringing the kind of efficiency that we expect, and we expect the impact to begin to feed back through our financial statements from now going forward. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I don't know if you want to just say a word or two, Shegu, on the loan book or the question around staging from
Jay. Yeah. Okay. The oil and gas book, as we said, is just 17.9% of the loan book. Two is that extension, maybe between 1 to 3 years, not necessarily long. The good thing is that some of these assets, the off-takers of those products are also investors. So it makes it very easy for us to see cash flow so we can determine. So that we are extending is just something that is logical and principled, because you can see the cash flow and you can see the reality and the investment they are making. On the issue of what other area would worry us based on valuation or issues in the economy, is the staff of state government. We saw the last time that some states were unable to pay for several months. So we quickly look at our books and we discover that what we have today is about 0.6%. Of our 0.6% of our loan book is what we have as employees of state government. So for that, we look at it and ask ourselves, fine. On what proportion went into written off, restructuring, recovery, loan growth we could have played a lot, but we also wrote off about 60%. You know, we hinted that Atlantic Energy alone was about 50% of our NPL then. So with Atlantic Energy going up at about 50%, then you had some other ones that the logical haircuts that needed to be taken to resolve some NPLs. Then recovery was about 20%. On the movement in stages, and movement in NPL alone, from 25 NPL to 9.9 means that you have 11. And the new loans created last year just fell into the bucket. So if you check last 2018, you had about 45% in stage one. Now you have about 55.1 in stage one. Stage two still remains about 35 because you have included finance in that bucket. And then stage one went to 9.9. So it shows the movement you've seen on those on the stages.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we still have questions, or we can stop at this time?
There are no questions at this time. I would like to hand the call back to Mr. Yuke Eke for any closing remarks. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. We'd like to start by thanking all participants on this call for your sustained interest in our story. For us, we are excited and indeed proud of what we achieved over the last 3 years, as you'll agree. It is a new beginning as we begin to execute our 2020 to 2022 strategic planning program. I'd like to assure the market that we have indeed repositioned this group for sustained growth. We believe that the heavy lifting done it is accomplished. The task ahead is for us to now take our leadership position in the industry. We will be addressing you with our first quarter numbers and also hopefully provide the guidance for 2020 financial year. Before then, if you have more questions, we request that you get in touch with us. Tolu, the head of investor relations, always available to also the executives to take the questions. And on that note, I'd like to thank you, and we're signing off now. Bye-bye.
This concludes the FBN Holdings Financial Results Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.